Hello, I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
Well, look at that.
Ha ha.
Do you think The Ringer are going to fire us after that draw?
Ha ha ha. Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast, The Ringer FC. I'm Yusuf Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am good, thanks, man. You forgot to mention it was a bonus Stadio Podcast.
It's a bonus Stadio Podcast, yes it is.
Yes. How are you?
I'm very well indeed.
You're wearing a different roll neck today?
I am.
Old Musa 2 Wardrobes Kwonga.
Listen, it's roll neck season. Only thing is it's return to winter, so...
Well, sometimes it roll necks in April.
That is wild. The fact that it is snowing. Can I say this? I was saying to someone today, I was just saying, like, isn't it funny how the climate jokes have stopped? Like, before I was like, climate change. No one is doing that now. Like, people are like, actually, yeah, this is real. Maybe we should take this seriously.
There's a lot of, are we the bad guys energy going around?
Very much, very much.
Anyway, hope everyone's staying safe and well.
Exactly.
We only spoke to you yesterday.
We did, and we
did. We're back again. Listen, a week without us, and then we are back 2 in 2 days. Everyone's just like, oh, you know, people need a holiday after the holiday.
Yes.
People are like, oh God, they're already back. Two in 2 days. Please, God, no.
This is the podcast they definitely didn't ask for, but they got it anyway.
No one asked for this.
Yeah, it's too tough luck. You'll find it on the feed.
quick bit of admin. Ringer F1 show is up now. I think it's on Spotify and Apple, maybe wherever you get your podcasts. It was really good fun. I was on with Kevin Clark and Megan Schuster and Erica Cervantes, and we did a little mock draft. Car, drivers, team principal, wild card. I don't think I won, but I think I did all right. It was very fun. Go and find that now if you like your F1 stuff. I'm going to swerve the rest of the app in because it's a bonus podcast. All right, so today we're going to do the World Cup draw reaction. Then we're going to get into the rest of the Women's Champions League games from Thursday night. So let's get into it after this.
Do it.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
All right, man. So good news for Ringer FC, I think, this World Cup draw.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. The Ringer Derby.
Oh my God, we're so getting fired.
The narrative.
We're
England
so getting
drawn
fired
to play against the United States at the World Cup.
Wow. Okay, so if you missed it, the draw for the 2022 Men's World Cup in Qatar was just made.
It was indeed.
Let's recap very quickly. Group A, Qatar, Ecuador, the Netherlands, Senegal. Group B, England, Iran, the USA, and one of Scotland, Wales, or Ukraine. Group C, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Poland. Group D, France, and one of the United Arab Emirates, Australia or Peru, Denmark and Tunisia. Group E, Spain, Costa Rica or New Zealand, Germany and Japan. Group F, Belgium, Canada, Morocco, Croatia, Group G, Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Cameroon. Brazil almost had the same group that they had in 2018.
Same with France.
Same with France. In Group D. Yeah, of course, yeah.
Wild.
Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea. Where would you like to begin, Musa?
Wow. Well, the obvious beginning is Group B, but yeah, with England, Iran, United States, and one of Ukraine, Scotland, Wales. But I would actually like to begin with Group E for the football. Spain.
Oh, sorry. I was 100% convinced you were going to go for the food.
No. That's Group H. Group of food and vibes. Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea, Korea Republic. That is undefeated.
That's a good food group.
That's the group of food. And then we had to get into that. But I want to go with Group E to start with just because of the football, Ryan.
Mm.
We'll get to the other stuff later. But for the football alone, Spain, one of Costa Rica or New Zealand, then Germany and Japan. That's a serious group.
Yeah, that's a very serious group. I mean, I would expect Costa Rica to come through that playoff against New Zealand.
Mm.
And I would expect them to provide a bit of a problem in that group, actually.
That's right, because that's the thing. Costa Rica, the way they closed that, there's an element of this team should have gone through automatically, I think. I think they should have gone. So then you have Spain and Germany. Spain are powering up. Ansu Fati may be back by then, hopefully injury holding up. Germany are showing signs of something quite exciting.
Mm.
And Japan are just a matchup for anybody. That is the football in that group will be extremely interesting, I think. We're looking at quality there, but also like potential upsets.
I think there are a few potential upsets in a number of the groups, to be honest. I don't think...
Yeah, let's jump somewhere else. Let's jump around. Yeah, jump around.
Jump around?
jump up and get down. No.
have we talked about the jump around game?
We have not.
If you're anywhere and you hear House of Pain jump around, just fix your eyes on any one person in that room and see how far past the first two lines they know.
That's hilarious.
Never fails. Group A, Qatar, Ecuador, the Netherlands, and Senegal. I think Ecuador might be a little bit tricky for people, but I can't look past the Netherlands and Senegal for that group.
Right. This is the thing. Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how deep Ghana and Senegal go, providing they get out of the group. I think it's going to be extremely difficult for Ghana to get out of Group H. But Senegal are—they're
the least chaotic team in that Group A.
Ooh,
yeah, like that's okay. Like Netherlands were very chaotic. I love the Netherlands, but they were very chaotic.
You can have the 1974 Dutch side managed by Louis van Gaal, and it would still be extremely chaotic.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they were chaotic. Yeah,
I think Netherlands and Senegal from that group.
I think so. Yes,
I want to save Group B for last.
Yes, let's save it for last. For so many reasons.
Let's go Group C. Argentina, yes. Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Poland. Now, this is an intriguing one because, bear in mind, I should probably just add a little disclaimer. We are literally recording this moments after the draw is finished.
Mm.
My first reaction from this was, it would not surprise me if Argentina didn't automatically qualify from this group.
Wow. You know, it's funny about this because I don't know how good Argentina actually are. This is the thing. I don't know how good they actually are. They could be, because they always get quite spiky World Cup groups, actually. Spiky groups. But then the thing is, because they've got players in transition, that the supporting cast of Argentina players who are stepping up to take over the mantle for Messi are still evolving. So, you know, a few months from now, they could have, like, you know, Alvarez coming in, Rodrigo de Paul more of a leadership role. Messi obviously is not what Messi was. Messi as the playmaker for this team around him. Messi is almost entering like Maradona World Cup 94 energy, right? Like a couple of years past peak.
But you know what I mean?
A couple of years, elder statesman, yeah. Couple of years past peak. supreme playmaker, team orbiting around him with a bit of speed. It's kind of interesting, Argentina.
This is I should probably add a little bit of context as to why I think that.
Mm.
I'm not saying that I think Argentina will finish like third in the group, for example.
No.
But probably Messi's last World Cup.
Mm.
They got the Copa done.
Yes.
The Copa America. I could either see Argentina going all the way to like the semi-finals and doing a mega run.
Yeah, a Cinderella run, yeah.
Yeah. Or I could see it being spectacular failure because of that pressure.
I still think, do you know what it is? I still think that they are solid and they have other assets. Like if Messi doesn't play for Argentina, they've got excellent attackers.
Yeah.
Excellent attackers. Lautaro Martinez has gone to a level that I was worried he might not get to. He's gone to it, right? Dybala's still in the mix. And this is the thing as well. These players now, like they're liberated. They've won the Copa. That was huge, right? They've done that. And that was a big thing. They've done that now. This is a free hit. Also, it's in Qatar, right? It's out of... We've seen this with Brazil as well. When clubs are far outside the context, they do a lot better.
That's a really good point.
Does that make sense? So when you're playing, you can just like focus on the group. Also, this being Messi's last hurrah, there's an energy, the last dance almost, there's an element of like how much of himself is Messi saving for this? How much is he playing within himself? Maybe not consciously, but this is arguably, since 2006, this is arguably the best outfit Messi's been equipped with.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and he was brilliant for a couple of World Cups that went under the radar. I think he was very good. 06, he was unlucky, got trapped to the bench but for the pivotal game. But Messi, I think, this is the best supporting cast he's had in a while.
For sure.
Does that make sense?
It's a bit of a kind of like paradoxical argument in the sense that like,
I think they're
the best equipped for a long, long time.
Mm.
But that instantly makes me just think, if you look at some of the aspects of Lionel Messi's career, there has been quite an element of tragedy to it on a lot of big stages for someone so great.
Mm.
And I just have a real fear from an Argentina point of view that this could be a potential upset. I don't really think it will be.
Yeah. This is like the most athletic Argentina I've seen in ages. And I think that's how they're going to play it. Mm. They're going to have goals in them, but they're not going to like be big goal scorers. They're going to be like, 1-0, 2-1, shut up shop.
Mm.
And that's going to be brutal because they get out of the group stage like expect them to. They're going to build momentum. And Argentina with momentum in a World Cup, they're no longer relying on Di Maria's hamstrings.
Yeah.
That is big for them.
Yeah, I think that's the really good point. Is the reliance on some of the previous supporting cast has kind of been gone. And
yeah. That's the best midfield they've had in a long time.
Yeah.
Papu Gomez, Lo Celso, De Paul, like those are serious footballers.
I think I've already talked myself out of my potential.
No,
hot
but you
take.
Had you had to go through this. That's the beauty of this draw, right?
It's all about the trust the process.
But the beauty of this.
the process of my decision making.
Can I just say that this is the beauty of discussing World Cup draws? Because as you discuss it, and it goes on. You start thinking about the permutations, right? Because the World Cup is all about matchups, isn't it?
We've seen how many times have we seen one of the strongest teams in the tournament, potentially on paper, just go out in a group that you're like, wow, okay, that probably should not have happened.
Right. Who's going to get caught slipping, basically? Yeah,
There's always one.
Bingo.
Every single tournament. And looking through it, my eyes were just drawn to that as like, I could see potentially that.
Put it this way, Mascherano wishes he had this team.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
If he saw this team, he'd be like, oh my God, I'd have, yeah.
Also, imagine Mascherano in that team.
Terrifying.
Group D, I think I think a lot depends here on who comes through out of those intercontinental playoffs.
Right.
If Peru land in that group, it's a very different dynamic than if the UAE or Australia get through in that group.
There's not a lot of goals coming out of that group. You know what France are like. France will stay within themselves. We know what France will do now. We've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think France will cruise through top, and I think Denmark will probably edge it.
Mm.
I mean, there is such a long way to go. I think this is the weird thing as well. So much of this now is depending on full fitness of squads and key players. What happens if Denmark get two or three injuries going into the tournament? Because remember, most of these players are going to be heading into a brief break domestically in the winter. it's kind of an unknown. We don't really know how this is going to play out from a fitness and conditioning point of view. Could be better, could be worse.
Yeah, Tunisia, decent speed and attack as well. So there's a lot of...
And they can hurt teams.
Exactly. That's the thing. At this stage, obviously, it's a World Cup. So there's always going to be those challenges. But I just think this group is potentially fraught. I mean, France need to start well, basically, I think. This group has an element of like 2002 World Cup about it, whereas if you start slow, then you're in trouble.
Let's, for argument's sake, say like France begin with a draw.
Mm.
A frustrating draw.
This is a group where France could end up with frustrating draws. Yeah. Like, this is very plausibly. Look, we saw
we're
what happened.
We're so sitting on the fence here. Everyone's going to be listening to this being like, lads.
Give us a hot take.
This is so on brand.
This is so safe.
I automatically climbed down from my Argentina take.
No, let me call it then. Group F, let's get a hot take. Come on, let me throw a hot take.
You're going group F?
Croatia aren't coming out of group F. Listen.
Do you know what though? I'm not mad at that though.
Give them a hot take. That group F is slyly, that is the scorpion group, right? It's not the group of death, but it's a scorpion group because it is slyly the most brutal.
Scorpion and sock group.
Yeah. Scorpion and the sock. Belgium, Canada, Morocco, Croatia.
That's an old school.
Morocco have the vibes there.
Mm.
The team, Morocco, they haven't peaked yet. You know, like it's all about teams in transition and peaks and evolution. Morocco haven't peaked yet. Right, you saw where they qualified. Hakimi obviously is the standout name, but they've got some serious attackers there. Croatia, obviously very strong team, but there's maybe a slight aging issue there, right?
Yeah.
How many more miles in the tank? And they've got Brozovic in midfield, who's superb. Modric obviously can do a turn. They've got serious footballs there, but Croatia need to start well. Like that group: Belgium, Canada, Morocco, Croatia. They're all legit teams. They're all legit.
That's a tough group, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, that's and the football we could see there. They're all good footballing sides.
Yeah, and also with Canada, I think the feel-good factor of them qualifying to the World Cup for the first time in, 36 years, that young core that they have, I think the pressure is really going to be off. I think there's a really interesting kind of contrast between maybe the US approach for this tournament and the Canadian approach, because I do think the Canadian side of it, without being patronising, but it's just like, they know that this team has another couple of cycles in it, potentially. Yes. But also, so does the US. But I just feel that there's probably more pressure on the US to perform.
Oh, yeah.
Instantly. So I could see Canada just like coming alive. There is always a team in a tournament that almost becomes the neutral's darling.
Mm.
And I think Canada have a potential to be that in this.
And that's right. And that's something else I want to throw out Canada as well. It's a free hit for them because they know they've qualified for the next World Cup because they're hosting it. They can plan. They basically make an 8-year plan now. Like in terms of building the game in Canada, which is the ultimate goal for what they're doing right now, is like, well, or going, let's okay, even quietly aim for, let's see if we can get past the second round. That should be the quiet, undeclared aim, because you don't say it then publicly, you know, everyone comes for you. But Canada should aim, let's get past the second round. As a goal. Like, that's our World Cup. Because beyond that, of course, it's brutal. But then, only because this World Cup for Canada is about creating memories and stories that will resonate.
Yeah.
This is the first World Cup they've qualified for since 86. Mm-hmm. Supremely skilled players in that team. Like we said, two of the most fun left backs of the entire tournament they've got in the squad. So go there, like, compete and go after them. Don't go with disrespect.
And actually, from a tactical point of view, I remember in the Euros last year, we were saying that Belgium were almost like two elite fullbacks away from being an absolutely mega team.
Mm, yeah.
That's where Canada will hit them.
Do you know what? That's exactly... This is, again, we talk about the World Cup matchups. Like,
yeah.
Go out the guts, like certain players. So for example, Croatia might have an issue with the aging. That might be a challenge for them. So go at that midfield.
Like if Croatia step out to Canada, Canada can have the potential to torch them on the break.
Right. And the same for Morocco. Morocco have that same thing. Morocco and Canada on the right days could conceivably take almost anyone at this tournament because they have the dexterity, they have the counter-attacking nous. Like they're smart. They can sit deep. They can soak up pressure.
For sure.
Really excited for them.
Group G, Brazil, currently the best ranked side in the world.
I love this group for several reasons.
Serbia, Switzerland, and Cameroon.
That is the one. Serbia, Switzerland. Rematch. Oh my goodness. Oof, that went off last time. Mm-hmm. So Serbia, Switzerland is just, you know, in its own category in terms of, you know, politically contentious as a fixture. But the thing about Brazil is this is very much a, Brazil often end up with this kind of group. And I call it like the bloody nose group, where they should get through. They should get through, but they'll get through and they'll be battle tested as a result of it. And I think that's essential for them because I kind of feel like Brazil, certainly good enough to win. And again, we've seen Brazil away from home. Look how fast they bounced back from World Cup 2014 in Russia. They were a legit team in 2018. Mm. They're going to come back strong. They have to work out, funnily enough, I think weirdly enough, the decision for them is who they play through because Neymar's going to be there. But we need to see the Brazil Neymar of 2014. That's the challenge. If Neymar comes alive, as he should, and frankly, this is what he really has to play for at this point because his PSG career in Europe's going sideways, it depends what Neymar we get at this World Cup. If we get the Brazil, he's not as quick as 2014. If we get the Brazil 2014 Neymar playing a mix of, a perfect mix of hero ball, but also deferring to his teammates, if we get that Neymar, this Brazil team is a threat for anybody. And they're going to go deep, I think.
My hot take for Brazil is if Gabriel Martinelli goes, which I think he probably will, if he starts, I think he could be the breakout star of that tournament.
Very fair. Love that shout. Genuinely. I love that. No, I agree, because he has a supporting cast. So he'll be able to just do his thing.
And he loves the bright lights. Martinelli. We saw it against Liverpool, you know, in the Arsenal-Liverpool game, even though Arsenal lost the game. He, you know, he's, like I said, man, he's a gallivanter. And World Cups are made for gallivanting players.
I love that shout, Ryan. I think that's a really strong one. I think, my goodness, you consider if Algeria had qualified, they'd have been that group. That would have been brutal. Like,
is it possible to get sent off in every single group game? Because Xhaka would have absolutely been sent off. He still might. Are we calling that group?
I think that's Brazil, you know.
And?
Switzerland second.
Yeah, I agree. I think
Switzerland second. Such a strong team, Switzerland.
Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea.
Wow.
I fear a little bit for Ghana in this group. I don't want to, but I do.
Do you know what I fear for? I don't know where the goals are coming from.
Thomas Partey. He's not international duty. He's a goal machine.
I just don't. I'm concerned about the firepower for them, I must say.
But I mean, Portugal stumbled into the World Cup.
They did. And also,
what is Cristiano Ronaldo going to look like in another 8 months' time?
This is the hard question for them.
Where he ends up playing football next season. Because it's, by all accounts, it's not 100% guaranteed that he'll still be a Manchester United player.
Mm.
That could have a huge sway on the World Cup.
He has to. Do you know,
he's going to go. There's no way in a million years he's not going to go, bar injury.
But he also probably has to start.
Yeah,
you can't.
Can you imagine?
You wouldn't hear the end of it. The reason why Cristiano Ronaldo has to start is because, frankly, because if they get knocked out of the World Cup, the group stages, and he doesn't start, that country is not big enough to return to. For the coach who makes that decision, it's just not going to work. So Ronaldo has to start just because that's going to be a problem, I think, later on in the tournament. But I think they've got enough tools to get through this group. They've got the goals. I mean, they've got more goal-scoring midfielders than maybe any other team in this tournament, Portugal.
It's them in Uruguay, right?
Yeah. I think so.
All right, then. Let's do Group B before we move on to the Women's Champions League. We posted a tweet just before we started recording saying, recording a bonus pod, should be up in a couple of hours. Shouts to Adam5727, who said, I love you guys, but please don't let it be as long as that draw. Patrick Corcoran said, it will probably still feel quicker than the build-up to the drawing portion of the World Cup draw. I was very glad that I didn't see any of that because by all accounts, it was very propagandary. And actually, I want to make a note of how we are not going to talk about that stuff today because I feel like it deserves a wider conversation. We've already had it in parts, in numerous parts, with the stuff around the World Cup. And I think there will be plenty of opportunities for us to talk about that in more depth.
Yes, absolutely.
And we absolutely fucking will. Don't worry about it.
Can I say that as well? It was just interesting to see one individual in particular talking about, oh, the great country, the great people. And he said it in a way that was like, because, you know, all countries, you praise all countries and all cultures, you know, we know that. But what I will say is the way that the individual in question, the way that Tim Cahill said it, was like, it was almost like a preemptive.
I mean, it's not like it's kind of in his job description or anything.
But yeah, that's, it was just a setting. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Hmm. It was just a bit, I heard that and thought, that's a bit dissonant. I will say my favorite part of the draw, my absolute favorite part.
Was the end.
No, it wasn't. It was the countdown music because they were desperately trying to open up the balls and get the paper out before the music stopped. And you saw it was visibly stressful.
See, I didn't even see the actual live draw. I was following it via something else.
I was crying with laughter because Jermaine Genius even said at one point, oh, it's getting quicker now, as in they're getting the balls out quicker. And just when he said that, I think it was Milutinovic struggling to get the ball out in time. And I was like, the name out. And I was like, this is hilarious. This is slapstick.
Before we move on, let's finish up on Group B.
Mm.
Names the geopolitical group.
Yes, the group of geopolitics. Yeah, so we have England, Iran, the United States, and any one of Ukraine, Scotland, or Wales. I mean, oof. So I think Nick Harris posted this actually. He made a good point. It's like that's actually the hardest group in terms of the world rankings.
Mm.
Like there is some serious football in that group, and this is, you know, there will not be many goals in that. Not just because of the way of the quality of the teams, but also the way those teams set up. These are fundamentally, you know, and I include England in this, these are sort of quite sort of reactive teams, low risk. You know, England, we saw that, you know, double defense midfield pivot.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to be a thrilling set of fixtures. I almost get the energy of like, almost, it feels very much like England World Cup 2010. Obviously England are better now than they were then. But Gareth Southgate is going to look at that and be like, I'll take 1-0, 1-0, and 0-0 out of that.
Yeah, the Gareth Southgate is 100% going to play four right backs in one of these games.
Oh, without question. That is like
England will win the game 1-0.
Yeah, that's a tough group.
It is a tough group, but I think England are the best equipped, and Gareth Southgate has shown basically no fucks as to what anyone thinks about his selections through the group stage.
None,
and it's all about progress, and he proved everyone wrong. At the Euros and England got to the final. The side they lost to aren't there this time around.
Which is wild.
Granted, there are some other very, 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 very good football teams there. However, there is not going to be a single easy game in this group. And that, I would include that, that also applies to whoever comes
through out of that playoff.
Of the playoff.
That's
obviously
brutal.
We don't know whether Ukraine will be able to bust it. Participate at all. We just don't know.
Yeah,
if Scotland or Wales progress, England haven't done particularly well against either of those sides over the last couple of years.
There's so much like surrounding context, like historical needle, like, you know, cultural, there's so much going on in each of these games that it's really going to be about just this. Actually, the blueprint for this game is actually England-Germany.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The blueprint is England Germany, just taking this thing out of it. And that's just why actually being someone like Qatar is just going to be quite beneficial to England. Absorb pressure, make a big change 10 minutes after half time, increase intensity, and then like do them. Don't fly out the traps at them. Don't fly out the traps and try and get overzealous and hit them with the early goal, like Mourinho style. Like, don't hit them with the early pressure because then that creates your own issues. Also, you know, weather to manage as well. I think Gareth Southgate looks at this group and is like, oh, that's a tough draw, but also I love it. Because by the time they should emerge into the second round, they should. And if they do go into the second round, they'll do so with absolutely no naivety. The thing about England as well, I have to say, in terms of the quality of the squad, just the depth of experience there now, like, you know, the last World Cup went to the semis, finals of the Euros. They are a form team at this point. We have to say they're a form team.
We have to talk about the USA though.
We do, absolutely. I was going to get onto that.
Because we're on the ringer, dude.
The USA, I would say this.
Currently ranked 15 in the world.
And I think the youth is an issue. The youth of the squad, I think unfair pressure might come on them because of the talent, but the talent hasn't had enough time to fully bed in. We haven't seen that chemistry fully develop. So the players on paper are excellent. I know this is a completely vain hope, but I'd almost say, like, not temper your expectations because the World Cups, so you want to dream. You want to dream, of course, but like, maybe don't apply undue pressure.
I mean, I
wouldn't be surprised to see them get out, and they should get out. They have the talent to get out, absolutely. It's a question of the chemistry and the match control. That's the thing.
Put it this way, I think with the US, they're attacking threats. What, Christian Pulisic is the captain. He plays regularly against Premier League defences. England had one of the best defenses in the Euros, and it's all going to be come down to like who can really score against that defensive unit, because they have really proved themselves against some very, very good attacking sides. I do think England will probably come top in that group. However, I don't think it's going to be plain sailing. I think it's going to be really, really, really difficult. And whoever comes out of that group is going to absolutely deserve it, because it's going to be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
We'll save all the lols and the memes for nearer the time.
We will.
We get absolutely cooked by the Ringer US audience. Oh my God, they're going to hate us so bad.
Yeah, they are. I think we gave a fair estimation there. I think that's fair.
Are you happy with that?
Yeah. I'm very happy with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if they're not
happy with that, they can't find me. No one knows where I am.
Yeah, so they can. It's Al Gonga on Twitter. Everyone go and find him. Go find him and tell him your thoughts. Let's take a quick break and then come back with the Women's Champions League.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, man, where do you want to begin? Do you want to begin in Germany or do you want to begin in France?
Let's begin in Germany.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wolfsburg 2, Arsenal 0. Wolfsburg going through 3-1 on aggregate. Wolfsburg, incidentally, making their 79th appearance in the Champions League, which is a record for a German club.
And looking in their own way formidable. This isn't the swaggering Wolfsburg of old, but this is dangerous. And actually, this was a conversation that we had maybe a season and a half ago about the turning point for Wolfsburg, losing Pernille Harder and how they'd rebuild, how they'd remain, you know, one of the main three or four clubs in Europe. The way they've adapted, I got to say, I'm really impressed. They've now knocked out what Arsenal and Chelsea, and they've looked good value for it. They've been smarter in both ties.
Smarter is the word.
Isn't that it? Isn't
smarter
it?
Is absolutely the word. So I was at the first leg of the Emirates, and Wolfsburg were just super patient.
Mm.
They let Arsenal have the ball. They didn't really press them. And then they really started to push Arsenal once they broke. So basically, Wolfsburg would break. And then all of a sudden, there were a load of Wolfsburg players in the opposition half, and they were pushing for second balls. And they were so confident and comfortable in their game plan. It was a complete contrast to Arsenal, who I think, over the two legs, I think Jonas will be very disappointed, because there's a bit of a problem with Arsenal. I don't want to start off on a negative thing with Arsenal, but I still think even though they went out, I still think Arsenal had the players to progress through that tie.
They did. But and Wolfsburg had the... Yeah, go on.
Yeah, but Wolfsburg had the nous, basically. And Arsenal have this seemingly repetitive problem where against really good sides, their composure in the final third just seems to evaporate.
Mm.
It's really bizarre. In the first leg, too many passes were hit too early, almost too panicky. Same thing happened when we went to the Barcelona game. That against Barcelona, you can kind of understand, but it was, I think we said after that game that it was, a lot of it seemed mental, almost like as soon as you get the ball, you don't know how long before it is before you're going to have it again. So it's almost like you can't concentrate. You're almost trying too hard to make something happen too soon because you don't know when you're going to get the ball back. With Wolfsburg, it's a different thing. But Arsenal were really, in the first leg, for example, kind of spraying balls out of play or to opposition players that weren't necessarily needed to be played. It kept kind of stunting Arsenal's momentum. And I think a similar thing happened here, but less so because of what Arsenal were doing and a little bit more because of Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg, I think, were way more proactive in the first half of this second leg.
Yes, especially in the first like sort of 20 minutes. Yeah, that
Arsenal
early
could
pressure.
Not get out of their own half.
No. And that's the thing they've changed. Wolfsburg is interesting because I said this before, but it's really interesting to tie back Wolfsburg's season to that win over Chelsea in the group stages. Mm. That comeback, like the self-inflicted problems through Chelsea, but then Wolfsburg really coming back because ever since then, they've done this interesting thing where, I mean, this is the, first of all, they're playing an old school 4-4-2, which is quite funny to me. Like, it's funny that like a team playing an old school 4-4-2 beats an English team playing like a sophisticated system. But the thing about Wolfsburg that's so impressive is the matchups. So they had Svenja Hoot, who's been a brilliant player for really an extended run of form. She's been brilliant, especially with the rebuilding up against Catley. That was a bad mismatch. Mm. Then you had this conventional 4-4-2, I say this, but then you had Jonstadtir pulling wide to expose in wide areas. And we've seen like time and again, Women's Champions League, the danger is the wide forwards. And Jonstadtir basically like was just, the speed, the touch on that flank is just, you have to double up against someone like that. You have to double up, especially as the game goes on. And she provided the decisive moment, the own goal by Leah Williamson. But prior to that, I want to say this about the rebuild for Wolfsburg. Lone Oberdorf has had to carry a bit of weight when Alex Pop's been out. And she's really handled that really well. Her and Wasmuth are kind of like the next generation of Wolfsburg stars. But the way that, you know, Pop came on at half time and helped solidify the midfield.
Alex Pop coming on at half time.
That's the thing. This is the thing that Pop's returned from injury and that makes them a different quantity.
Mm.
A different because now you have a semi-final and Barcelona are going to be well advised to be concerned about that because Wolfsburg have the tools to hurt them. They have the tools to take a lead and then shut that thing down. You look at like Real Madrid, for example, in that playbook, Wolfsburg are like an advanced version of that where they can take that and like just shut that thing. If they go a goal up early, you put money on them to like counterpunch and do something dangerous. So I think Barcelona will look at that. Barcelona would rather have got Arsenal. Arsenal without question because also there's the way they set up is you kind of know slightly more what you're getting, I think, with Arsenal. Wolfsburg have tactical flexibility basically, and that's interesting. But
Arsenal should. If you look at the personnel there, Arsenal should. Yeah. I think Arsenal over these two legs have actually massively underperformed compared to their ability.
Very fair, yeah.
Jill Roard took the lead for Wolfsburg, scoring against her old club. Just a kind of flick in the box.
Nice close range finish, yeah.
Celebrated as well, which, I mean, it hurt, I'm not going to lie.
Without restraint. There was no muted celebration there, was there? That was interesting.
No, not at all. But nor should they be. Players don't owe fans of former clubs anything.
That's the thing, it wasn't muted, but it wasn't vindictive.
No, it was just more joyful.
Just joy, yeah. Here's the thing as well, like, you've scored a decisive goal in a Champions League quarterfinal. How can you mute that? Come on.
Tabia Vasmut had the ball in the net not long after, given offside.
Yeah, it was offside.
But Arsenal really, really struggled in that first half.
Yeah.
Second half, they were better. They seemed to press Wolfsburg higher up, seemed to collectively move another 20 yards up the pitch. and were much, much better, but just couldn't really, again, find that decisive action in the final third. There were a couple of chances. There was the, well, it was right after the second goal, the Leah Williamson own goal, which went through Zinsberger's legs. Arsenal hit the bar from a header, Miedemar from a corner.
And great save by Schult, yeah.
It was the rebound, wasn't it? The Leah Williamson header, Schult pushed it onto the post. That was Arsenal's chance. But they did have a couple of chances in that second half. They created a little bit more. It, again, just like I said, that decisiveness was just not there. And it was kind of like that in the first leg. I said after that first leg, just anecdotally, I'm not sure if the statistics back this up. Obviously, it's hard to measure this statistically, but there seems to be sometimes with Arsenal in big games a bit of a lack of intensity. You know how you see really like Barca turn the screw?
Yes, yes.
Some of Arsenal's play in big games that I've seen this season has been a little bit lax, apart from maybe like the Chelsea game in the beginning of the season.
Do you know what's funny? It's funny to say lack of intensity. If you look at a team that's trying to force the agenda, as Arsenal should have at a certain point. So you compare, we'll get onto this in a moment, but what Leon did, and you look at intensity there, and how quickly the first and second passes in the movement are forced. Mm. Like they're hammering the ball into gaps. And there is sometimes an element with Arsenal of like, it's almost like the windscreen wiper effect where the ball's kind of going from left to right across the field, but no one's penetrating, no one's cutting. We saw that actually, to be honest, we saw that with, PSG were guilty of that against Bayern. The failure to be incisive, the failure to surge forward. I wonder if the loss of someone like Van der Donk has been a factor there or not necessarily the loss of, but in terms of that type of late run, that type of front foot, I wonder if that's an issue.
I also think it is worth pointing out, though, that Joe Montemurro and Jonas Eidevall are two extremely different coaches. And I think this season there were always going to be some kind of like growing pains that.
Yeah.
Because I think certain players who absolutely suited Montemurro's way of playing just don't suit Eidevall's way of playing.
Mm.
And I think that you're seeing that occasionally, like some really technically gifted players who came in the summer. Someone like Mane Iwabuchi, for example, can't really get a look in, and you're kind of thinking, why? Why not? In games where you need someone to just create that little bit out of nothing.
You need some disruption. Yeah, Arsenal are not disruptive enough.
Yeah, but then you see the signings who came in January, like people like Black Stenius, who are a little bit more direct, a little bit more physicality.
Mm.
And you can see the way that Jonas is trying to move them, I think, compared to how Montemurro had them playing.
It's almost caught between two teams at the moment.
On the other side, we'll talk about them in a little bit. The job that Montemurro's done at Juve and the way that they're progressing under him has been super interesting.
Mm.
So I think Miedemar is probably on the way out. And I think, as sad as it would be, I think going forward, again, this could be one of those cases of a very good player leaving maybe isn't the worst thing for the club. Because I think also in big games this season, she's been a bit disappointing, if I'm being honest. I don't like to be like too critical because the amount of amazing things she's done, we all know that she's an unbelievable footballer.
Mm.
The amount of goals she's scored proves that, especially at such a young age still. But there have been a few times this season that you've really expected more from her in certain games. And I don't know whether maybe the switch in position since the turn of the year is something to do with that, playing a little bit deeper. It's not necessarily that you want her to, you're expecting her to score as many goals as you were when she was playing as an out-and-out nine, but I just think her all-round play in certain big games this season has been a little bit underwhelming.
I must say, I don't like the deep-lying role. I know that she can pass beautifully, like I know that, but that, it'd be like putting Harry Kane deeper like that. Like you ultimately need someone to lead the line and then come deep, as opposed
it's
to
like someone like default. Yeah, you can do it, but yes, should they do it?
Thank
like,
you, exactly. Yeah.
It's almost like it's an easy thing to make, but it's like the difference between playing Bergkamp as a second striker and playing Dennis Bergkamp as like a number eight.
Yes, I mean, it's
exactly. Not an eight, but she's not been playing in that position. But you know, I think
you
it's
need
just,
to be on the shoulder.
It's almost
often
a little bit too deep.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it is also worth noting that a few players were missing for Arsenal in this game. Leah Valti was missing, and that was a huge miss because she's probably been, since Christmas, probably Arsenal's best player. And yeah, I don't know. I think it was overall for Arsenal, I think over the two legs, they will be pretty disappointed, I think. One thing on this game though, should Arsenal have had a penalty? The key to Paris?
I thought so, actually.
I thought so.
There are two penalties that should have been penalties in this round. Blatantly. Yeah, we'll come to the next one. We'll come to it in a bit.
The Juve one?
Yeah. That's reputation. That's marketing.
Wow.
I'm calling it.
You know what? That's marketing. That's very smooth. But yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it would have really, I mean, it was in the 88th minute, 89th minute. I don't think it would have changed the outcome of the tie. But you never know. It might have made those last few minutes interesting. I think this is one of those that just because there's not a huge amount of contact, it doesn't mean it's not a foul. Almut Schultz kind of comes flying out. Nikita Paris has to really hurdle.
I saw some guilty expressions.
Yeah, they were saying on the DAZN commentary, though, they were like, you know, is he sprinked? And I was like, well, fucking, yeah, she's jumped. Because, like, she has dived, but she's jumped. And it's like, well,
if you see a combine harvester coming at you, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you fucking jump. It's like one of those things on, what was that game show that they used to have on BBC, and there was a load of people stood on these like podiums over water, and there was one of those things that would just like swing round and you had to jump over it.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, what are you just going to do? Stand there and get, you know. Anyway.
There were a couple of like Wolfsburg, not Schultz, because Schultz was the picture of innocence, but a couple of players around like, oh, we got away with that.
Yeah, definitely. And the check didn't really seem to last too long. I was a bit like,
interesting. Interesting.
But anyway, I think over the two legs, Wolfsburg, very worthy winners.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will face Barcelona.
That is tasty.
Oh my God, what,
that is
what
really
a,
tasty.
What a tie. We have to try and go to that second leg, the Wolfsburg leg.
Yeah, we
have to.
We do.
Let's go to the other.
Yeah, let's do it.
Lyon overturning the first leg deficit to win 3-1 against Juve. Ada Hegerberg opening the scoring. And actually, do you know what? Juve were pretty good for that first 25 minutes.
They were very good. And, they were really very good.
What happened? So the penalty shout was on
Wendy Renard brought down.
Is it Lena Hurtig?
I'm not sure it's Hurtig. Well,
I think it was.
I couldn't see because Renard climbed all over her shirt number.
Yes, this was so bad. So basically, I think it was Hurtig running through and basically gets a barge in the back from Wendy Renard.
No, it was a piggyback.
It looks like she kind of just pushes her shoulder top of her arm thing in the back. Mm. It's a penalty. All day that's a penalty. But I didn't see a huge amount of protest either.
I mean...
Was it just one of those kind of like, yeah, I knew where this was.
I howled with laughter. I'm like, how is this not... That is, you know, no, this is reputation. This is like, oh, like, you know...
The smooth... defending
ambassador of the game. Yeah. Oh no, surely Wendy Renard would not do that. No, surely not. It's like if you go past
listen, needs must. You know, that's what Wendy Renard's like, you know, listen, I took that personally. So I took it down.
It's like when you're going past the gallery and you see like an elite painter like defacing their own art. You're like, no, of course they wouldn't do that. You're like you double take. And it was Wendy Renard very lucky to get away with that because that was a pivotal point.
It was a massively pivotal point. Because if Juve go two goals ahead in that tie.
That changes everything. Considering how they ended the tie, exactly. With that intensity. So that changes everything.
However.
Now, of course, yeah.
No, go on, sorry.
Well, no, but Lyon took that and ran with it because the quality of their play after that, like that front three, honestly, it is just an absolute... Mallard, Hegerberg, Cascarino, and Macario behind, who was outstanding, maybe the game's outstanding player. Those four in particular were just, they were irresistible.
They were so good.
The passing combinations, you talk about intensity, like that is the other team. If you talk about a front runner, I'm not saying they're going to win the Champions League. But if you want to talk about front runners to win the Champions League, it's Barcelona and then it's Lyon, just because the complexity of some of the passing movement, the speed. They had Amandine Henry on the bench. Had Gnaz Datir on the bench, Marouzan on the bench. This is the energy. This is the level. This Lyon team is on smoke. Yeah. They're on smoke. They're angry. They've been disrespected. They look at a Champions League and they're sitting there watching Barcelona getting all this hype, all this love, and they hate it. I'll put money on them. They hate it. And they're all smack. They're all smiling, the poacher mates, and Chippy's, oh yeah, we're so happy to be through. No, like there is a scowl. There's a scowl because that was angry football from Leon. That was demonstration football.
Do you think Leon are just, you know, when they rock up, if they get through, let's say for argument's sake, they progress through, because they're playing PSG in the semi-final. Let's say they go.
Their level is higher.
Let's say they go through and they play Barcelona. Let's assume Barcelona get past Wolfsburg in the semi-final. Leon rock up to the final. You think like, as the team bus arrives, you just hear.
Leon coming. Amazing. That's exactly what the energy is here.
You think?
Leon are coming like Omar for sure.
Let him talk.
Because there's been so much
amazing.
Barcelona. Wow. Oh my God. The best team ever seen. Oh, and Leon is like, what? We want all these straight. And everyone's talking about Barcelona. They did one little raggedy Champions League and everyone's on their hind legs. Yeah, everyone's on their hind legs. Barcelona. Barcelona. Leon do not like that at all.
They don't. No, you're right. They don't like it. Wow. Okay. Wow.
That is going to be a tasty, if that does manifest, because Wolfsburg are like extremely dangerous, obviously. But like I say, Leon really, really showing that pedigree. They were some of the combination passing. If you didn't catch the game, like just watch that middle hour from.
So good.
Well, from about 20 minutes in to about 10 from the end, that hour was just a demonstration.
So good.
At that point.
And there were so many like amazing passes into the box that were just like a whisker away from being made contact with. But also like Caterina Macario's goal was so good. So good. Comes across on the turn, drags it back, finishes. It was so good. It was such a good goal.
Ice dancing. France has not seen feet that quick since Yoann Gourcuff. Like honestly, that was ice dancing. The move. And the beauty of that turn, the turn was so good. She could finish it with the instep.
Yeah, yeah.
Like normally the turn is so quick, you have to go the outside of the right foot because it's all one motion, but it created so much room.
Yeah, she had time to set her feet.
Oh my goodness. Good that is spectacular. It's spectacular.
Juve got one back towards the end to make it 4-3 on aggregate, but it was too late and Leon go through.
Can I say this as well, actually, about Wendy Renard? We've seen a couple of flash points, actually. If you look at the goal, it was her concession that allowed the corner that allowed that. Mm. So she was outmatched. I wonder if, you know, we saw it in the last edition of the Champions League. We saw it, I think it was against PSG when they got knocked out, that she struggled there. Like, I wonder if the solution to beating Leon is courage, actually. Disrespect, going right at the guts of that Leon team, because they like playing on the front foot. When you really go at them and cut at them in wide areas, or if you get those spaces between the fullbacks and centre backs, that's where you get some joy. And at PSG, that they're a known quantity. That's an all-French semi-final, so they know each other's games well. But we said this before: the movement of PSG was the best thing about them in the last tie. It's a classic example of where a team's strengths matches up with a team's weaknesses. Mm. So I think that despite all the praise of Leon, that is a close semi to call, I think.
I agree.
It's a close one.
I agree, man. I think the two semi-finals are set up to be super, super good.
So
it's been
tasty.
A great tournament already. And
yeah, yeah.
These two semi-finals are, they're really good, man. I'm super excited.
Shout out to DAZN, I got to say. Like, I don't normally shout out streaming services, but I love what they've done with this. Yeah, just, I love what
they've
done.
You can watch multiple language highlights on YouTube.
Yeah.
So good.
And you can watch the full game. One last about DAZN, I love. You can watch the whole game back. And it's got a little spoiler. It's got a spoiler thing.
So good.
So funny.
Congrats to Barcelona, Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
OL. And PSG.
Yeah.
Should we bounce?
Yeah, let's bounce. Let's do it.
Let's bounce. A bonus pod on a Friday.
Exactly.
Friday night vibes with Sadio.
Listen. The feed runneth over.
Oh dear. We hope everyone stays safe, staying well. Obviously, there's a lot going on at the moment. And we hope everyone's hanging in there. Don't forget to check theringer.com. If you listen to us on the podcast app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. It'd be very kind.
Please, please do.
We're going to play out on a little wild one from Al Schuss called The Heights, out on the brilliant new Mal Recordings. Anything you want to add, Musa Kwanga?
Nothing further. All good.
Lovely. Much love, everyone. Have a lovely weekend.
Yep, absolutely.
And we will be back on Monday.
See you then.